After the movie Free Willy became a hit, word got out that the star of the film, a killer whale named Keiko, was sick and still living in a tiny pool in a Mexican amusement park. Fans were outraged. Kids demanded his release. I'm Daniel Alarcón. From Serial Productions and the New York Times comes The Good Whale, a story about the wildly ambitious science experiment to return Keiko to the ocean. Listen to new episodes on Thursdays. Want early access to the whole show? Subscribe to The Times at nytimes.com/podcasts to listen on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, Bassem Razo lost his family and his home in a U.S.-led airstrike in Mosul. Video of the attack shows the strike hit its target with military precision. So why was Bassem targeted? And how often does this happen? Part two of the story. It's Friday, November 17th. Bassem, the night of the bombing, who survived the bombing and who died?
Okay.
In the end,
let's start with my house. I survived. My wife was killed. My daughter was killed. In the other house, my brother's house, his wife survived. My brother died, and his son died. So four dead, two survivors.
It's horrible.
It is horrible, yeah.
So Bassem's case introduced so many questions. Questions about the intelligence behind an airstrike. Questions about how often this is happening.
All right, let's knock on the door.
Asmat Khan has been investigating civilian casualties in the war on ISIS.
My reporting partner, Anand Gopal, and I, we set out to do a systematic sample.
Wow. And where was he when the airstrike happened? And Abu Amar was the one who was killed? Or?
Wow, all the way down here.
And what's the son's name? What time that night? Ziad?
We've been to the sites of 103 airstrikes.
Wow. They were killed in the same airstrike or in a different airstrike? Was there one strike or two? How many? What?
We went to these sites, we mapped them, we interviewed hundreds of people, we excavated the damage, we looked for any presence of ISIS. And so in a sense, it's the first systematic, ground-based look at how this air war is actually playing out.
So essentially, you went to Iraq, hit the ground, and tested the numbers that the U.S. government puts out about just how precise this air war is.
Exactly.
Haider was killed and Ali's legs were cut off?
Yes.
Ah, I see. I'm so sorry. Okay. Ali's...
And what did you learn from this systematic investigation?
Omar Yunus Mohammed Jassim, he was killed. Hey. Haider Ziad Yunus, also killed. And then injured.
So the government says that of the 14,000 airstrikes it's carried out, only 89 incidents have resulted in civilian deaths. That's less than 1%. That's 0.6%. What we found on the ground was that 1 in 5 airstrikes resulted in a civilian death. That's 20%.
Wow, 20%.
That's 31 times higher than what the government claims. So these numbers were startling. They were very different from what the coalition has been saying in its own studies of civilian casualties. And they left us with these questions of, well, why? Why is this so dramatically different from this precision-era weaponry that we've been talking about? And that was a question Bassem also wanted the answer to.
Well, the first thing, I piled the report.
So from the get-go, Bassem is gathering as much evidence as he can.
I put on the photos of the property, my family.
He's pulling up GPS imagery of his homes.
What has happened to my farm.
He's gathering pictures and names of the dead, and he tries repeatedly to report this airstrike to the U.S. government.
I went to the American consulate, and they interviewed me.
He has a meeting at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad.
The first thing they said, well, we have to go to the DOD to verify that this strike was an American strike.
He follows up with emails.
And they told me that they will get back to me.
And eventually, his emails stop getting answers. We turn to the coalition to ask questions. I emailed the coalition their own YouTube video showing the airstrike. And the response I got was, there is nothing in the historical log for September 20th, 2015.
Meaning the U.S. government told you, we have no information about firing a missile that hit such a structure.
Not long after, the YouTube video actually disappeared from the coalition's website. And after that happened, I sent them an archived copy of it. I sent them the GPS coordinates of Boston's home. I sent them before and after satellite imagery. And I sent all of this together with the timeline that Bassem had reported. And in the coming weeks, all of the coalition's airstrike videos were taken off of YouTube. And eventually, they opened an investigation as a result of our inquiries. And by March, the meeting was set up.
How did it feel to know that you were finally going to meet with Americans, with someone who might be held accountable for what had happened?
Well, there were so many things that I wanted. First of all, is I wanted to know why I was bombed. I wanted an apology for killing my wife, my daughter, my brother, and my nephew. I wanted an apology. And the second thing is I wanted compensation. The third is I have to get my name cleared, and I want the American to say, clearly, we made a mistake. This person is not ISIS. We apologize. We would like to let you know that this man is not ISIS. And this is exactly what I want.
So while Bassem is dealing with the tragedy of losing these members of his family and the people that he was so close to, he's also gripped with fear. He's thinking about what it meant that his house had been hit so precisely.
When a target is bombed, in front of the Iraqi forces, they don't think that the Americans made a mistake. So they think, yes, this was an ISIS location, and the people at that location were ISIS members.
Because how else would have missiles hit this home so precisely?
So he's not just afraid that the United States and the coalition may see him as ISIS, but that everyone in the community, people he knows and he cares about, they may view him and his family as ISIS.
Local authorities, people in charge, after areas that had been taken over by ISIS were liberated, vigilante groups attack ISIS collaborators. They go after them. They burn their houses down. There is revenge and retaliation, and he didn't want to be on the receiving end of that.
And really now, I'm scared to go back to Mosul. I need something in concrete evidence from concrete letter from the Americans saying that this guy is not ISIS. So I can be safe in my house.
Just before the meeting, I got a message from Bassem, and he says that he just had a dream about Mayada.
You know, I've seen them in a dream like only a few times, but they never speak. They just look at you and they never speak in the dream. This is really weird. I've never heard them speak.
You know, he was lying in bed with Mayada, and he could really feel her skin next to his.
Yeah, this was very real dream.
So this dream was, this was different?
Yeah, this was different. I can hear laughter. I can hear talk. Yeah.
What did they say? What else?
They feel that I was doing something for them, and they were happy about it. I can see them. My wife was smiling in this dream, and she knew I was working to get justice done. My wife was looking at me, and she was smiling at me. I felt happy. When I woke up, I felt happy.
So that morning, my reporting partner, Anand, meets up with Bassem and they go to the Erbil International Airport together. They wait at the main gate until a white SUV with tinted windows and an officer in American military fatigues is behind the wheel and picks them up.
So I'm Jacqueline. I think you communicated by email a couple of times.
They sit down at a round conference table with other military officers and a military lawyer who introduces herself.
We just wanted to start by expressing our sympathy. Not only on behalf of the Army, but also on behalf of myself.
And what did this woman say to you? How did she start?
Well, she started with, she said, I'd like to apologize in my name and on behalf of the American Army. We are sorry. This bombing done by mistake.
We try our best to prevent those mistakes, but we hope that since we did make a mistake here, that we can do everything that we can to right it as best we can. I know that there's nothing that I can say that can make up for the loss that you...
One thing cannot be returned is the loss of life. Of everything else could be redone or rebuilt. The loss of life is unrepairable.
Well, I asked for about $500,000 for the house. We had about two cars damaged. I think the amount was like $22,000 for a car and $8,000 for another car. I had some bills for my operation, which was around $13,000 to $15,000 USD. So this was the amount, just roughly about $600,000, just under $600,000. Yeah.
And this figure of about $600,000, this is just for.
For the property.
This is for the loss of,
yes,
of
just for
property. No, this is not nothing to say of the emotional loss.
Exactly. I did not say anything about emotional suffering and loss of my income, not being able to work again. And then she offered me the payments.
And so we are prepared to offer you a condolence payment. And so I just wanted to say first, explain how this works. So basically, it is not meant to recompensate you for what you have lost or for rebuilding or anything like that. It's just meant to be an expression of our sympathy and our apology for your loss. So the amount in US dollars is $15,000, but we'll be paying you in Iraqi dinar, so $17,550,000 Iraqi dinar. Okay? And so if you are willing to accept that,
no.
You're not willing to accept that?
It's an insult to me. No, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry also. We are capped
by regulation. I have to say, sorry to say, ridiculous.
I understand that.
I laughed, but then I thought this is impolite of me. And she said, I have to tell you, this is just to say sorry, but you will have the opportunity to file for... physical damage. I said, when?
My understanding is that for a claim to be compensated for a destruction of property, let's say, it can only be issued after the activities in that area have ended. So if we are finished, defeating ISIS in Mosul after that time, that's when people can come forward and file things.
She said, well, because now the war is still ongoing on ISIS, I cannot promise you when. Maybe it will be done after the war is declared over on ISIS, and maybe it will not.
Is there an office or something that people can go to? Or
how? Not at this time, sir. There used to be.
Is this how much my life is, my wife and daughter is worth to the American system, to the American government? I mean, we are humans too. True?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what made me angry. This is what makes me angry.
So for the last 2 years, Congress has set aside $5 million to pay civilians who've been hurt by U.S. combat operations in Iraq. But they haven't paid a single part of that. This was the first time that the coalition was making an offer to an Iraqi civilian or even a Syrian civilian for the deaths of their loved ones.
All right. Do you have any other questions?
No, I have no questions. We'll be in touch.
So as this meeting is very quickly wrapping up, Bassem, as he realizes he's not walking away with the payment he wanted, asked about what he thought he might be able to get before he left. And he asked for a letter affirming his innocence.
Further information, I don't want to be in trouble with the central government, so I have something to clear my name.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And so just so you understand, we are actually, what's taking so long is that we are working to declassify the document so that the most can be released.
Okay.
So I
just need a paper saying that this house was hit by mistake.
It should be done any day now, sir.
Unit, ISIS property. So I just want to be clear my name and be on the safe side with the central government.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's pretty much all I can offer you then at this time. And I'm very sorry.
Thank you
for coming out.
Okay,
anyway.
Thank you for your...
And then you walked out.
Yeah, I just walked out.
Do you know if your name has been formally cleared at this point, that it no longer suggests that you're a member of ISIS?
I have not received anything from American Army to this content, which I requested the direct letter from the U.S. Air Force saying, yes, we bombed and it was a mistake and Mr. Razzo is not ISIS, so we would like to clear his name. This is what I want. But I did not get it.
Bassam, as somebody who spent so much time in the United States with Americans, did this feel like the America and the Americans that you knew?
I know there's a bureaucracy. I know army bureaucracy, but I was not expecting this. No, I was not expecting this.
Asma, we keep talking about how precise this air campaign is, and the United States government wants to keep talking about just how precise it is. I wonder if that's ultimately beside the point here.
Well, when they have the wrong target, it is beside the point. It doesn't matter. We obtained the investigation, or a portion of the investigation, from the coalition into the airstrike on Bassam's home. What it showed was that they believed that structure was an ISIS command center. You know, they did an hour and a half of drone footage surveilling this compound, and they saw that there were men opening gates, that they didn't observe women or children. And they filmed, I think, over 3 days in 15-minute increments. And based on what they saw nothing out of the ordinary. It says that in the report. But they also saw nothing to contest the intelligence that they'd gotten, which is that this was an ISIS headquarters.
Well, one thing made me really, really angry was when they mentioned that they have an hour and a half of aerial surveillance to my family and to my farm. And they said there was no sign of family living in there. Hmm. Well, the time of the surveillance was in summertime. In summertime, the heat in Iraq is 45 and 50 degrees Celsius.
Very warm.
Very, very warm. I mean, you cannot stay outside for minutes during the day. Definitely, they will not see anybody moving out of the house because everybody will be inside in the cool. But if they did the surveillance during the nighttime, we will be sitting outside in the garden. They will see kids running around. They will see us doing our barbecue. They will see that families live in these premises.
This is the, quote, most precise air campaign in the history of warfare. And so the idea that the intelligence could be off the way it was in this case, or that they had only monitored for an hour and 35 minutes, all of that raised questions about what was really going wrong and why. And so when we looked at the total number of civilian death airstrikes we found, half of them were the result of poor or outdated intelligence, most likely. We couldn't find a discernible ISIS target nearby. They had possibly misidentified the target to begin with. And so in this era of precision weaponry, where you can hit just the right part of a house, just the right way you want to, that doesn't matter when you have the target wrong.
So in more than half the cases, the question wasn't whether the coalition was being precise. It was being precise, but it was precisely hitting the wrong targets based on some form of bad intelligence.
It appeared to be either outdated or faulty intelligence.
So can you tell me about the first time that you went back to your house in Mosul?
Yeah, this took a place like 4 months ago. Me and the reporter, Azmet.
This is the entrance from the farm to our house.
And when we pulled up to his home, there was this pale yellow gate. We entered from where the guard's house was. He wavered for a moment. He told me later, he was afraid. He didn't know what he would see or find. He'd seen photos, but He didn't know the effect it would have on him to see it in person.
You never came back after it happened, did you?
No. My first time.
And so we walk in, and you just see this beautiful garden.
Wow.
It's gorgeous. There's trees with lemons. There's citrus plants. There are crickets chirping, and the sun is just filtering through these branches.
We have strawberries.
This is olive tree.
And if it weren't for the aircraft above, just constant hum of aircraft above, and the rubble in front of us, it would just seem like this perfect oasis. So we enter and we walk into the kitchen, and I start to look through what you can find. You can see the chairs, the table, and then you can see these just this evidence of
light bulbs,
their past lives. There are these recipes.
Just found a bunch of recipes.
Where?
In the kitchen.
That Mayada used to ask Basim to print off the internet.
How did she ask me to look for the recipe?
That's so sweet.
Really, yesterday.
You could find things like this, just remnants of their life.
And I started going around the house and looking for some things from remaining from my house, and I could not find anything.
This was the laundry room.
We walk into the laundry room. And the thing that set him off is that he could see his daughter Tuka's shoe.
At that time, I broke down. I was in tears. This is the only thing that really hurt me.
This white platform heel peeking out of the rubble.
They were white high-heel shoes. She wore them like the day or two before the bombing. They had a party for women in my brother's house, and she was wearing them. And I remember, because she does not wear high heels. So I was sitting in the living room, and I could hear her, because her mother told me that she will wear high heels. So I could hear her come down the steps, and I said, Tuka, honey, be careful. I don't want you to fall down. I don't feel like taking you to a hospital. I was just joking with her.
Right.
He said, Dad, don't worry. I can make it. And this was her first time to put makeup on. The night before, her mother told me that she would put some makeup on her face because it was like an engagement party for her cousin. So she said, please don't embarrass her. So she went down. I said, Tuka, honey, come here. I want to see you. She said, Dad, I'm in a hurry. I want to go. I said, Tuka, come here, please. I would like to see you. So she came to the room and she covered her face with her hands. She did not want me to see her with makeup, lipstick, and eyeshadow. I said, honey, remove your hands. I would like to take a look at you. And I said, honey, you look beautiful. Just go. Don't run fast. I don't want you to fall with these high heels. So when I saw this pair of shoes, her picture just came rushing back to my memory, and I broke in tears. Yeah.
And the whole time we'd been hearing bombs hit around near the river, coming from across the river. And there was one that just came pretty close.
Outgoing or incoming?
Incoming.
Oh, shit.
And I know Basim wanted to stay. We all did. But we just packed up our things and we left.
Basim, did you find any peace of mind after visiting the house? Did it make you feel any better?
No, it did not. No. Because I still feel that I have not got justice for them. Once I get justice for them, then I will be relieved. Mm-hmm. I still feel I have not done nothing for them.
I really want to thank you, and
thank you so much.
I want to wish that you can find whatever peace and purpose is available to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Bye, boss.
Bye, bye.
We'll be right back.
I'm Jonathan Swan. I'm a White House reporter for the New York Times. I have a pretty unsentimental view of what we do. Our job as reporters is to dig out information that powerful people don't want published, to take you into rooms that you would not otherwise have access to understand how some of the big decisions shaping our country are being made. And then, painstakingly, to go back and check with sources, check with public documents, make sure the information is correct. This is not something you can outsource to AI. There's no robot that can go and talk to someone who was in the Situation Room and find out what was really said. In order to get actually original information that's not public, that requires human sources, we actually need journalists to do that. So as you may have gathered from this long riff, I'm asking you to consider subscribing to the New York Times. Independent journalism is important, and without you, we simply can't do it.
Here's what else you need to know today. On Thursday, 2 weeks after the plan was introduced, and without a single hearing being held, Republicans in the House passed the most sweeping tax overhaul in three decades. The focus now turns to the Senate, where Republicans are trying to pass their own version of the tax plan. That version would help fund the tax cuts by repealing a provision in the Affordable Care Act that requires most people have health insurance. And the national reckoning over sexual harassment reached the Senate on Thursday, as a radio show host accused Minnesota Senator Al Franken of groping and forcibly kissing her in 2006, 2 years before he was elected. Shortly after she came forward, Franken apologized to the woman, Leanne Tweeden, saying, quote, "Over the last few months, all of us, including and especially men who respect women, have been forced to take a good, hard look at our own actions and think, perhaps shamefully for the first time, about how those actions have affected women." Finally, in an interview with my colleague Jennifer Steinhauer, New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand was asked about how the Democratic Party had handled past allegations against one of its leaders.
Is it your view that President Clinton should have stepped down at that time, given the allegations?
I think that is the appropriate response. But I think things have changed today. And I think under those circumstances, there should be a very different reaction. And I think in light of this conversation, we should have a very different conversation about President Trump and a very different conversation about allegations against him than what has been had to date and what's currently being had.
Jennifer's full interview with Gillibrand will be on this weekend's episode of The New Washington. The Daily is produced by Theo Balcom, Lindsay Garrison, Rachel Quester, Annie Brown, Andy Mills, Christopher Worth, Ike Srizkandaraja, Claire Tennisketter, and Paige Cowett, with editing help from Larissa Anderson. Lisa Tobin is our executive producer. Samantha Hennig is our editorial director. Brad Fisher is our technical manager. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. Special thanks to Peter Sale, Sam Dolnick, and Michaela Bouchard. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro.
See you on Sunday, when we'll have a special episode of The Daily for kids.